It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the WISN World Cup Daily Podcast. India's World Cup dominance over Pakistan continued with a 7-wicket thumping in Ahmedabad. It looked at one point when Pakistan were 155 for 2 and Babar and Rizwan were going well, that we might have a game on our hands. And then Pakistan did what Pakistan do, collapsing dramatically, and India did what India do, bowling superbly and then absolutely smashing the chase. Rohit Sharma falling just short of his 8th ODI century, and that was that. I'll be joined by Katya Whitney later in the show, but first we've got WISN India editor Adya Sharma, who is at the Narendra Modi Stadium to see the game unfold. Hello, Adya. Where do we start with that? Loads of what India did was great, really. I mean, Kuldeep was excellent. Siraj started it all off and he got Babar. Rohit was sublime with the bat, but Bumrah was the player of the match and, you know, five bowlers took 2 wickets, but that was the right decision, I think, because those 2 tickets he took were extraordinary, weren't they, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the off-cutter that got Rizwan, was it? It just seemed like the perfect delivery at that moment for someone who comes from Ahmedabad. Bumrah understands, you know, what kind of, you know, surface maybe this is. And it sort of just felt like he's always got that magic ball ready and he just unfurls it whenever he wants to. Just the right length. I think in the last game, someone had spoken about test lengths and how those are important in the ODI game. And I think Bumrah is someone who sort of really highlights that with his bowling. He just keeps it very accurate. And he's got like these huge set of variations that really come in play. Especially on a pitch like this today, because you could see that the ball was stopping a bit. It was not really easy to bat on. We saw a couple of dismissals also where the batsmen were trying to sort of hit the ball across, but they did not get any timing. So I think, yeah, Bumrah really understands these things and that really shows in his bowling.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing hearing him talk after play. You often don't get much from the post-match presentation, but he was really interesting actually talking about, you said the off-cut was because he knew that the ball was, he just saw the spinners were getting loads of turns. He was like, well, I have a ball that spins as well. And it was like a proper off break when you look at the Hawkeye deviation thing. And then the next over, he got one to Shadab? Might have been. But he talked about how that was actually reverse swing and how he changed up for that again as well. He is an absolute genius as well as being kind of a freak with how he bowls. And India would probably be the best side in the world even without him. And it's not really fair that you stick him in there as well. What was your moment of the game?
I think the moment of the game for me was Siraj bagging Babar Azam with that delivery. Because interestingly, it felt first of all that Babar was getting into that groove. He doesn't have a great record against India in ODIs, and for him to sort of, you know, stitch that partnership with Rizwan, it just felt like they were set for a big score. I think Mickey Arthur and Grant Bradburn both had said that Pakistan is a 330 team. And so they were looking for that sort of a score. And it did seem at that point that they would be close to that. I think that delivery sort of changed the flow of the game. And you could see what happened after that. So that was the moment for me.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know what it was like in the stadium, but watching on TV was quite almost like a subdued moment because that's the shot that Babar just plays. He kind of just guides it down. And then I think because he was across all three stumps and because it just clipped the bales, I don't think everyone quite realised what had happened at first. And you look down to the bales lying there. It wasn't like some of the Bumrah ones where it's like, you know, a bat is completely cut in half. It was like, it was more subtle than that, but it was obviously, it's still a wicket. It was still, you know, an excellent piece of bowling from Siraj. Yeah.
Interestingly, actually someone asked about it at the presser and they were like, you know, the ball kept low and Siraj quite quickly defended it, saying it did not keep low. It was because the ball had pitched in front and he tried to play it behind square, and that's why he was probably a bit late on it. So he emphasized that this was executed just as he thought, and you know, it skidded a little. So in that sense, yeah, I think it was a great ball.
Yeah, and his ball to Shafiq's really good as well, like a cross seamer rather than the wobble seam that he normally bowls. And the spinners kept things so tight, and Hardik Pandya as an all-rounder is a gun as well. It's and Rohit's in such good form as well. I mean, can anything stop India, do you think?
I think one thing that sort of is there as sort of a question mark is how the middle order would play if required, because in the first 2-3 games now, they haven't really been required. So that sort of stays a question mark. And we've seen that many times now, that, you know, the top order sort of fails in a big game, and then the middle order doesn't really sort of do well, is not able to counter the way they would like. So I think that's the biggest thing for me. If India reaches a situation where that might happen. But I think overall it's really difficult now for other teams to face India, because now they've got a bowling attack that knows their strengths well. They've got like a variety of bowlers. They've each playing to their own strengths. Like someone like Siraj today saying that he's bowling cross seam from the third over itself because he understands how the pitch is acting. He knows there's more value in the ball, you know, not hitting the seam. Stuff like that. I think the Indians understand the situation well. And obviously, you mentioned Rohit. Having someone like Rohit, a big match player, do really well to start with in the tournament. We always had, you know, everyone was talking about how Rohit might not, you know, might have been past his prime, or, you know, 2019 was sort of a year to remember. But like it started off so well this year as well. So, and I think one thing that really sticks out for Rohit is that he has changed his approach. The Rohit Sharma we've known for so many years starts slow, takes his time, understands the situation, and then builds into a big innings. But this has been completely opposite. He's been attacking from the get-go. So I think overall India has a great, great setup right now, and it'll be very difficult to beat them.
Yeah. Since you mentioned the middle order, I guess, because even though Shreyas Iyer made that score today, he looks still a little bit uncertain against Harris Ralph, as lots of players will, but in the middle overs, that's actually sometimes when you get the proper express pace bowlers coming on. It's like it's India v New Zealand. That might be when they look to use Lachie Ferguson, for example, and that will be another challenge for them. But I guess he did get through it today to make that 50. So it's not as if he's completely all at sea. You were there at the ground. What was the atmosphere like? I mean, this is India Pakistan in a World Cup in India. It must have been pretty good, even if not everyone was happy.
No, it was really a sea of blue. I mean, we haven't had an official attendance count yet, but the stadium was filled. And it's easily and understandably the most in-demand game of the league stages. You know, flight and hotel prices had gone up 5 to 10 times. Tickets were being sold at an obnoxious rate, resold even. And I think the pre-game shenanigans sort of foreshadowed how one-sided the game would be. There were basically close to no Pakistan fans, you know, in the lead up, players had been asked so many times about, you know, the pressure of an India Pak game, 7-0, what that scoreline means, and it sort of, you know, it just came out to be so one sided. Even like the entire pre-game stuff, the whole thing was such an occasion. You know, A-list singers and like extremely patriotic songs. So it was Pakistan feeling like a fortress coming to India, playing in Ahmedabad. It was very difficult. It was very intimidating for them, if you think about it, to play in front of such a huge crowd. And, you know, Mickey Arthur at the end of it saying that this did not seem like an ICC event, it seemed like a BCCI event, sort of, you know, underlines what sort of a setup India had given this game to start with.
Yeah, it looked amazing from the TV, but yeah, I think Sky had a thing right at the end where they managed to pick out one lone Pakistan fan in the crowd, and that was it. One in what, 130,000 or something.
The fact that they had to pick one Pakistan fan sort of says that how lopsided the whole setup was. It was a really like aggressive show of strength, so to speak, and it sort of turned out fine with the cricket as well at the end of it.
Yeah. Well, cheers, Adia. Look forward to catching up later in the tournament. Now it's back to Katia for a bit more on that game and a look ahead to tomorrow.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Katia, as good as India were, Pakistan will see this as a missed opportunity, right? They were 155 for two, and then it was basically all over in a flash. What went wrong for them?
Yeah, I thought it was really disappointing, actually, the way they handled the batting once Rizwan and Babar got out. They kind of just imploded, to be honest. And when you've got such a long tail with three genuine rabbits at the end of the order, you need your middle order to get you some runs, or your lower middle order to get you some runs. But when you've got like Iftikhar coming in at six as well, and Mohammad Nawaz, such kind of players who are either going to get you really quick runs or no runs at all, you need to find a way to get yourself up to, even if it's 30, 40 runs shorter of where you'd need to be, especially on a pitch like that looked so easy to score runs on. And they didn't. They just kind of got blown away for 191. And that was that. They were never going to be able to recover from that. So if they're going to take something from this, it's when Rizwan and Babar don't score the bulk of their runs, they need to find a way to make a score rather than just kind of getting blown away. But yeah, it was quite disappointing, to be honest. So obviously, like, India have got such a good bowling attack, and Bumrah's just insane at the minute, and he's averaging like 11 in this tournament, and he's conceding less than four runs an over. And those two wicket taking balls he got were absolutely ridiculous. And you can argue that Kuldeep is the best wrist spinner in this tournament, and that's before we've even got to Siraj and Hardik. But the way that Iftikhar and Nawaz in particular got out, I think you can say is pretty disappointing, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess it was actually quite hard to work out what to make of the pitch. Like, the commentators were saying that Pakistan were aiming for 340 when they should have been aiming for 280. And then actually the way India are batting, look, they might have chased 350 more than that. So it was hard to know what would have been a defendable total. Obviously 191 definitely wasn't going to be. I guess we also, Pakistan have had a few sort of green batting shoots in the tournament, but we also, like, as good as Shafiq and Shaquil have looked at times, there are, like, and as good as Imam's record has been in his career, Rizwan and Babar are just so key to that lineup, because you say it is weird that when you have 9, 10, 11 can't really bat, and yet you've got Iftikhar at 6, who's also not fully a banker, Shadab a bit out of form. I guess maybe the way they'll look at it is if Shaheen and Shadab get back to their best, which is that they're quite a distance off, but, you know, we've seen them come up and down in form, and if those new players kick on, then it is a formidable side, but they are quite a long way away from that at the moment, I think. And it's hard to know what they can do in terms of changes as well, I suppose, isn't it? Because what they've got, might they think about bringing the other leg spinner? That's the one thing that always seems to be suggested. I guess they've also got Fakhar Zaman in there, but they've already dropped him. Bringing him back doesn't really seem like the move that's going to rejuvenate the tournament. What, Mohammad Wasim Jr. is there, but...
Yeah, but none of those names really, like, excite you with that X factor, kind of bringing like the super sub kind of thing. And I think having lost Nasim Shah, they really needed Shaheen Jarafridi to step up and be even better than he normally is. And you can see them in the power play almost desperate for those Yorkers that he bowls to come on. But in the first over, his speeds looked down. And in the first over today, he couldn't get the line right to Rohit and Gill. And they punished him for it. And as we said, if Pakistan were going to have that kind of X-factor bowling that they needed Shaheen Afridi to make up for Nasim Shah not being in the tournament, and he's not been able to do that at the minute. So they can tinker with the side however much they want, but they need the players they have got to step up as well. And you can't just rely on Babar and Rizwan to bat you out of trouble all the time. You need everyone to step up, and it takes a group effort to win a World Cup. You can't just have certain players in your 11 step up from time to time. You need everyone to do it, and that's not what Pakistan have got at the minute.
Yeah, and you could see, especially with Shaheen, there was, like, he's going so full in search of that swing sometimes. It was one ball to Gill, and fair enough, Gill did miss it, but it was like him, like, shin high on the pad. It was like a proper full toss, and sometimes he gets wickets with those, but it's not quite happening at the moment. And I guess the guy who has been a proper strike bowler, Harris Ralph, was absolutely dealt with by Rohit Sharma, which was your moment of the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, Rohit hit two really amazing sixes off him. The first one was straight over mid on. I think that was his 306th in, is it international cricket?
No, ODIs. Yeah.
Just ODIs.
Yeah, he's the leading six hitter overall in international cricket, and he's the third player to get to 300 ODI sixes, and Afridi and Gayle are the other two. So
nice. Yeah. So there was that one, and then he like sliced another ball for like a 90 meter six that looked like he hadn't even intended to do it. And honestly, in World Cups, what happens to Rohit? Like, what does he do? He just reaches a completely different stratosphere. And I was thinking about it today, as brilliant as Rohit is, you almost take it for granted in between these kind of tournaments where you're like, yeah, that's Rohit. That's one of the best openers it's ever played. But then you watch him in a tournament like this and you go, oh, no. He's properly, properly good. And he's really incredible to watch at the minute. So if he keeps going, people have got to find a way to get him out. You know, that's the only way that India are going to be stopped, really. You need to find a way to bowl at them because no one's been able to find it at the minute.
Yeah, and I think it's also impressive how he's actually changed his game a bit. Like, he is a lot more aggressive than he has been before. Okay, well, because Afghanistan wasn't a small chase and he went out like this. And this obviously was a smaller chase and maybe have a bit more license. But this is kind of the way he plays now. And it's so different to how he used to be, where it was a proper get set and then explode open. That's why he had got those three double hundreds, whereas now he's setting the template for the rest of the team, and also that kind of puts a bit more trust in the middle order, which has before been there failing. And he had a brilliant day as captain as well, with his getting bowls on at the right times, reviews at the right times as well. India very, very good. My moment of the day was Sachin Tendulkar's commentary stint, which wasn't quite as entertaining as Matthew Hayden's a couple of days ago, but it was just as baffling, I thought, because it was a really important time in the game. Like, Jadeja and Kuldeep were bowling to Babar and Rizwan. Pakistan had got off to a pretty good start. The spinners were tying it down. It was kind of tactically quite interesting. Like, you had Rizwan especially was trying to get creative. Like, he played one sort of slog sweep. He got one under edge for four, did a little scoop for four. Babar had an LBW that was just not out on review. And then you had Sachin on commentary talking about like what he'd had for breakfast 30 years ago, or talking about how he'd change ODIs to have 25 each inning split up into 25 overs things, which is the, like, it's weird. So he's obviously like could be the most powerful man in cricket if he wanted, and this is the one opinion that he has, and he says it all the time. It's pretty weird. And also, like, it should work. Like, Sachin on commentary for India Pakistan, like, you know, talking about all the great things he's done in that game, all the, you know, the rivalry and that sort of thing, like, it should be amazing. And yet it was a pretty weird little stretch of TV.
Yeah, but you can say what you want, and that's brilliant.
Yeah, know? That's true.
You've got to go around those, you get paid to go around those stadiums and say whatever you want. You can say what you have for breakfast a few years ago, 30 years ago, and everyone will still want to hear it. So, you know, if you're Sachin, go for it.
Yeah, no one can interrupt him and say, actually, Sachin, we need to talk about the cricket, can they? And also, he's actually on the official commentator panel for the event, so he basically just turns up and has a bit of a chat when he fancies it.
They thought he did such a good job the first time, they'll have him back another few times.
Yeah, exactly. Let's quickly run through a bit of injury news we've had today. So Kane Williamson, poor man, has broken his thumb. So if you didn't follow yesterday's game, Williamson made his comeback after months out with injury, looked really good, right? Basically like the Williamson of old, making 70 odds, then gets hit on the... It's also the thumb that should be harder to hit, like the one that's away from his body that's just sliding his bat in, gets hit by a throw when he's running a single. Turns out that thumb's been broken. So New Zealand have kept him in the squad. They've called up Tom Blundell as cover, and hoping that Kane will be back for the back end, or I guess we'll reevaluate. But it's pretty sad for him. And then Sri Lanka's captain Dasan Shanaka has been ruled out of the tournament with a thigh injury, and they've called up Chamika Karunaratne in his place. That tournament goes from bad to worse for them. But looking ahead to tomorrow, England take on Afghanistan. This looks like the most likely Ben Stokes has been to play in this World Cup. He did a pretty full-on stint of training today, it sounds like, and Joe Root was sort of cautiously optimistic, I guess, in the pre-match press conference. But England have a big run of games coming up with South Africa, Sri Lanka, India and Australia all in the space of 2 weeks sort of following this game. So it's not impossible they hold him back for that. Or Owen Morgan was saying that actually maybe this isn't the worst way to ease him into the tournament. Chris Wokes has been ill but trained today, so looks like they might have a full 15 to choose from, but they might rest players depending on if they see fit. When Stokes does come back, who should it be for, do you think?
Well, they've got a couple of ways they could do it, right? So the most obvious way to do it would be to take out Harry Brook and have a kind of like-for-like placement of specialist bat for specialist bat, and have Stokes in at number four with Butler at five and then Livingston at six. Or they could look to potentially take out Livingston and have Stokes in, or Stokes and Brook, a combination of at four and five. And try and do it that way. They also could, I think it's much more unlikely they try and take out someone like Sam Curran, because then you're relying on like 10 overs between Livingston and Root, and I don't think that would be the best option to go down. Most likely they take out Harry Brook. He hasn't performed to what people kind of, I guess not expected, but were hoping he would perform so far in the ODIs he's played. If he'd come out and scored like one of those hundreds that he's capable of scoring, then it would be a much more difficult conversation. But it makes the most sense, given that Stokes can't bowl, to take out Harry Brook and put him straight in at number four. So if he does play tomorrow, that's probably the most likely place he'll come in for. But it will be interesting to see if they do try and kind of test him against Afghanistan before such a big round of games coming up, or if they give him another game. You'd hope England would beat Afghanistan fairly comfortably, and whether they give him that game to properly get his hip in shape or not, we'll have to see. But yeah, if he does come in, it'll probably be for Brook, you'd have to say, right?
Yeah, I think I'd agree that's probably what they will do. I actually, what I would do is to leave out Sam Curran. Like, I think that Livingston's ODI record is just really good, basically. Like, he's averaging nearly 40 with the bat and averaging sort of less than 25 with the ball. Like, okay, he's doing that in kind of weird ways. Like, he's, you know, not bowling full quotas of overs, and he's, you know, that record is boosted by, you know, some runs against the Netherlands and that sort of thing. But I guess that might also mean that they do just see him as a number six option, which is sort of fine, I suppose. So yeah, I'm actually, it's crazy to think, given how much sort of ink was spilled with about Harry Brook before the tournament started, that now people are kind of might well be broadly okay with him being left out. But I guess that's what happens if you don't make runs in lots of consecutive games. And it does also show that batting ODI cricket is actually a tricky thing that has to be learned. It's like, it sounds like we say, but it's not like batting in Test cricket, and it's not like batting in T20 cricket. And Brook just hasn't quite cracked yet how to do it. I'm sure he will in time, but you know, a World Cup is maybe not the time for him to be doing that. So maybe it's not a travesty if he does get left out, I suppose.
Yeah, I think on Livingston though, I get, like, he has been really good with the ball in this tournament. I think that changes when there's an expectation on Livingston to bowl a certain amount of overs rather than every wicket he gets, or every over that he keeps down the scoring rate is a bonus for England, or one that Sam Curran or who else doesn't have to bowl. So I can see the logic of taking out Curran, but I think given where England are in this tournament already with one loss, they kind of need that extra bowling depth that Livingston, a combination of Livingston as the sixth bowler, can provide, really.
Yeah, and then I guess there's another team in this game as well, Afghanistan, who got a bit of a pacing from India. And I suppose what will be a bit in focus, quite a lot of chat about when Rashid Khan bowls, I suppose. They've kind of made a virtue of holding him back, and then other teams have had to attack their weaker bowlers and then get out to them. But I guess when you've got better teams, they're going to attack your weaker bowlers and not get out to them, and so they might have to rethink how they reuse Rashid Khan, I suppose. But we'll see how that goes tomorrow when it'll be Yaz back on hosting duties, Butch as well, and possibly other at the moment mystery guests. Please do join us then. Cheers.